Today's episode of the Film Stage Roundtable is brought to you by Mubi, the streaming online cinema for your free month trial of Mubi. Go to mubi.com/filmstage.
Try to see it my way. Do I have to keep on talking till I can go on? While you see it your way, run the risk of knowing that our love may soon be gone. We can work it out.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Roundtable. This, of course, is the spin-off podcast from the Film Stage Show, where rather than reviewing a feature film, we go over various topics related to film culture, general discussion, deep dives into specific minutiae, all that fun stuff. Who is we? I am Brian J. Rowan, your host. With me today, as always, we have Phil Graham. And Michael Snydell.
Woo.
Yeah, it's a Thursday that we're recording on again. So you all at home know what that means. We might as well be drunk. I feel like I should always apologize when we record on a day that's not our usual. Because our energy's all off. You know, our chakras are out of alignment. I'm sorry if that's cultural appropriation. No, I'm not. It's just a weird way to start. Another weird way to start is doing this mere days after the election.
What election?
The big one. It's like American Idol but longer.
It was extra fucking long this year.
Stayed up till 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was like, oh, they're not going to call it. Okay, fine. I'm just going to go to bed. And it's like that thing where, like, you've caught someone in a lie and you just keep expecting them to admit to it. But
or just the thing.
Yeah. And it's just like, just say it. Just say what you did. And, like, America was like, no, we're not going to say what we did. And I'm like, but you did it. And then they just still wouldn't say it. So fuck
yeah,
you, CNN.
I just straight up went to bed. I had to be up at 5 or 4:50 in the morning, and so I was just like, you know what? I'm just gonna find out in the morning. I'm just gonna rest. I'm just gonna sleep. I'm not gonna go with all this because about like I would say 8:30, 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
I was looking at the TV
time, we should say you two were in Central Time, so I knew
so
around
that was
10 o'clock what was happening. And I stayed up another 4 to 5 hours because I was like, I know what's happening. Just say it. Just say what's happening.
To be fair, I also ran out of booze, guys, so that may have been another motivation.
I stayed sober, but I did have ice cream, so there's that. That's its own kind of thing now. But yeah, so, you know, that's what it is. We're all collectively, like, hanging out with that new reality. And I want to say, we are not a political podcast. We do our best never to, like, go out on a tangent and start throwing our politics around when it's not directly related to something that we're talking about. And I just want everyone out there to know that we chose all of our topics before the election happened. These were topics where we were like, what'll be fun that could tie into the election, like in a joking way or perhaps a serious way.
We can't help if they become prescient.
Yeah, don't go writing in being like, oh, I see your politics because you chose to talk about this one thing in particular. It may be that it just is a little more relevant now, but we were not trying to make a statement. What are we trying to make a statement about, you may ask? Trying to make a statement about Mubi, the streaming online cinema. That's what I'll make a stand for. I don't care about being with her or making America great again. I care about Mubi, which has no tagline and still doesn't have a tagline despite us seeking one. Guys, Mubi, Horrific October is over and those films are starting to leave. It's starting to leave, guys. So you got to hop on this so you can check out Calvary, because Ask the Pig. What else does Mubi have coming? We talked about this a little bit on Sunday. It's got the Johnny Toe double bill, which is The Invisible War and
not
Infernal
me.
Affairs. What do you mean, not you?
You said double bill.
God God damn it, Bill. God damn you to hell. That's what I have to say.
All right, Johnny Toe's great. Let's get back to this.
Yeah. So that is streaming on Mubi now. And I should just tell you, Mubi introduces a new film every day. You have 30 days to watch it. And then after that, it's gone. But during that time, you're able to download it to your phone. So if you're like, oh no, Brian, a movie that I just liked came out, but I have to leave in like 10 minutes and I won't be around internet or cell reception for the next 40 days, I can be like, you know what? Download it. Watch it offline. It's awesome. That is Mubi, MUBI.com, and you can get your free month trial by going to MUBI.com/filmstage. Gentlemen, are we prepared?
Both no.
Morally, physically, mentally. I heard someone say no, but I'm not going to accept that. Here is our first topic. And I didn't come up with clever titles this week because, in all honesty, I forgot. So the topic that we will be talking about is which movie dystopia would you most like to live in?
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Yes, indeed. What a wonderful world. Well, let's be honest, no one was going to be 100% happy with whatever the results of the election were. So we thought, hey, if we're moving towards a dystopia, just depending on what kind of dystopia we get, why don't we figure out which dystopia from film would be the one that we want to work in, live in, raise a family in. Now, we had some conversations about this because obviously many of these are class-based. I said you should, like, shoot for the middle, or whatever you deem to be, like, the biggest population within dystopia. So, like, you can't choose the Hunger Games and then say, but I get to be President Snow. All right? You can't. Donald Sutherland has that title. You get to be Katniss. So, let's,
My goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a whole new tone here on this Thursday recording of the Film Stage show. So guys, let's talk it out. Let's see what we got. Michael Snydell, I am curious to know what you chose as your movie dystopia in which to live.
Well, obviously, you know, I'd prefer if we weren't in a dystopia at all, but
that's not an option. Is
but
it?
With that said, if I had to pick something, I went with the 2013 Ari Folman film, The Congress.
Ooh, that's a good
one. And so this is a follow-up from the people behind Waltz with Bashir, which is what they're probably more well-known for. The Congress kind of fell under the radar. I don't know how you guys feel about it.
Yeah.
I really liked that film.
I think it's flawed, but very interesting. I'm sorry, Bill, what were you saying?
I liked half of that film. I can deal with the rest or not deal with the rest. But that film massively underperformed for what it should have done. Considering the pedigree that it came from and the people involved and everything like that, and just kind of the high concept nature of it, it seemed fascinating. I remember hearing about it for a couple of years before it ever actually came out. And there was a lot of kind of secrecy around it, but go ahead.
With that, I mean, I can definitely see where you're coming from, Bill. I think I probably liked it a bit more than you, although I definitely understand the splits perception. So unlike Waltz with Bashir, guys, what is the animation term I'm looking for that Waltz with Bashir?
Rotoscoping.
There it is. The Congress is actually a combination of rotoscoping and live action, and the way that it shifts between those two things is potentially a little less smooth than what you would like. But the reason why I picked it for this question is that, man, this is a hard film to describe, but what makes its dystopia so interesting is that it's basically set in a future where people have created their own manifestation in this virtual world where they can literally choose to be anything. So it's dystopic in normal, or not normal ways, but conventional, stereotypical ways. But it's also dystopic in the sense of it's a society where it brings up the idea that you're totally anonymous if no one knows who you are. So the fact is, at any point, you could change into anything. And I'm not just talking about humans, but just shapes, just abstractions, anything that you can imagine. And so it's an absolutely gorgeous film, and also deeply depressing. But, you know, if you're going to live in a shitty world, might as well be pretty.
That's a good point. It's not bad. And I will say that some of the animation parts in that looked kind of fun, you know.
Yeah.
As long as you don't think about the dark reality underlying it. Bill Graham, what about yourself? First of all, would you want to live in the dystopia of the Congress? And then let's give us yours.
Are you asking me? Hell no.
Literally what I just said.
Yeah. No, well, you didn't say my name specifically, so I didn't know whether
Michael,
you were...
Can you back me up? Did I say his name?
No.
I don't know. All right, anyways, whatever. Let's
Bill,
go ahead
Bill,
and move
please
on.
Tell me if you'd like would to live wanna... in Mike's dystopia.
No. I would not like to live in his acid-fueled fever dream fantasy world, crazy sauce. I think it would be pitiful and very sad to see artists, actresses, actors, things like that, give up their face, their ability, and just kind of walk away with a lot of money, and then see them thrown into porn and see them thrown into just anything and everything. And yeah, I think that would be very sad to see. Not that that isn't going to happen.
Did you all watch the most recent and previous season of BoJack Horseman?
Yes.
I haven't watched all of them, so.
Whole thing about like full body scanning and all that from the Congress basically becomes a plot point in BoJack Horseman.
Yeah.
It's makes sense. Kind of weird.
All right, well.
Yeah, I mean, I can see BoJack kind of going for that because he's a lazy asshole.
Well, we won't get into the plot of BoJack
Horseman. Yeah.
So I will say, before we go to Bill's dystopia, I think, like, no. I'd love to try that technology. It seems super fun. Sure. And, like, getting to hang out with animated John Hamm would be super cool. But, like, the underlying reality is just a little too dark. And I just don't know. I don't know if I could do that. So I'm going to have to side with Bill on this one. With the caveat that if it was, like, just something I could do in a normal, okay world, I'd be totally down with it. But, Bill Graham, why don't you lay your dystopia down on us?
All right, so I went back and forth. I was gonna say Mad Max Fury Road just because it would be a badass place to kind of live, but yeah, it would also be pretty shitty more than likely.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna go for something very different, and I'm just gonna say WALL-E. I think it would be delightful to be fat and overfed and hover around on hover chairs.
Well, Bill, if you want the first two parts of that, do you want to swap lives with me?
wait, what?
I said, if you want the first two parts of that, do you want to swap lives with me?
Do you ride around on a hover chair?
That's why I said the first two parts. I'm fat and overfed, but okay. I will get that hover chair, goddamn.
Well, here's my favorite part, though, is so this film has robots that actually are able to kind of communicate a little bit. And I think that would be a delightful world to live in. They're cute. They are sometimes malfunctioning in very cute ways that are sometimes destructive. I think that would be adorable. And also, we're out in space and just like living it up big time. And then what is the end of the film? We come back to Earth and we try to repopulate it and we try to make it better.
See, that's like, where you lose me, because that sounds like a lot of work.
I don't know. Like I'm into it. I'm into it, because then whatever success I have is mine, and I don't have to worry about somebody else like coming and taking it or doing anything. So like, it would basically be feast or famine in that sense. And I think it would be really, really rewarding to repopulate the Earth by yourself. Right? Yeah, kind of.
I feel like it would be there's so many jokes I could make. When you say something like it would be fun to repopulate the Earth by yourself, I think to myself, I don't know, I'd like to have like maybe at least one person to help with that.
You know. And I like
Mike is dying.
I like their naivete as well, that they think pizza grows on plants. I think that's hilarious. Plants. And, you know, this guy can basically learn anything by asking robot what he wants to know. Yeah. And then he gets like an adorable like explanation of everything until that shit goes crazy and tries to kill you. But never mind that. Let's not talk about how.
Okay, so Bill wants to live in a future society where robots take care of everything, but you are technically part of a fascist state run by a Walmart stand-in.
Hold on. Adorable robots.
Okay, adorable. An adorable robot oligarchy keeps you in your place, fat, happy, and ignorant. And you say, like, you're out in space, but, like, no one seems to notice that.
Yeah, and that's kind of like the best part, right? So I don't have to worry about like getting sucked into the netherworld and like you know, I just live and think that here's a beautiful beach that I get to play around in. I get to kick my feet at.
But no one really does that until like they lose the trappings of the dystopia, you know what I mean?
Yes, true. Okay, so I am kind of fast.
I get it. I'm just saying.
I mean, you know, the whole movie is the dystopia I want to live in. I don't want to live in just the first half of
the full arc. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Okay, so Bill wants to live the dystopia and then live the dream of rebuilding a better world. Michael Snydell, do you feel like you'd be down for that?
You know, I'm not sure if there is a better world this week, honestly.
Guys, I know we're all in a weird place, but like, let's
sort of fucking around. Okay,
let's try to.
Come on, I had to soft.
Who is this
that.
We? I'm going strong, guys. I'm going strong.
Until you get up in that microgravity and you get fat and happy.
You gave me a softball. I had to take it. I mean, come on. So, would I want to live in a overfed? What is this? An overfed?
It's Wall-E. You've seen Wall-E, right?
I have seen Wall-E, but I never really thought that society was that fleshed out in Wall-E.
the fat people on the Axiom who are raised from birth to just like consume and
who are drinking their big gulps. I know.
Hold on. But they end up on Earth and they have to wobble around and they have to figure it out. So
they're like adorable little space manatees trying to find their Earth legs.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
But Bill, again, is that post dystopia? Does that count? You know what? We're gonna let it count.
No,
I'm not gonna get into this argument.
Yeah.
So
that's like saying Children of Men's ending is post dystopia because there's hope. Like that's bullshit. It's still dystopia.
No, I would say like if Children of Men ended and it was like 30 years later and then it showed like a bunch of fucking kids running around and like Clive Owen smiling happily, that would be post dystopia. Sure. But yeah, it's okay. We'll go with what you've got. So Michael, would you want to live out the final 40 minutes of Wall-E?
No, because the robots get the way more interesting story.
Man, there's a love story in the middle there. Come on.
You know what? I'll take my internet, the ignorance of my internet world.
But that's kind of like what they've got.
Well,
plus cupcake in a cup.
Yeah, but there's like, you know, this weird illusion of transcendence in the Congress. And, you know, it's like, you know, there's bigger ideas than just wanting to.
I'm not saying you got to like choose one or the other. Like, you could. Well, I'm not actually going to put you in one of these.
well, thank you. Yeah, no, I would say that no.
This is right. Black Mirror season 4. Here we go.
Oh, fuck no.
I'm sure there was an Are You Afraid of the Dark about this. Bill, I'm going to side with you again. As long as we do the thing where we get off the ship. Yeah. So I'm fine with that.
The arc.
Yeah. You gotta run the arc. So that's cool. Also, can I make another amendment? I want to be Wally's best friend. Like, can I do that?
Yeah. You want to be the cockroach? Or are you talking about...
We are all the cockroach.
No, I just like... I'm fine with being one of the formless masses. Like, I'm not asking to be the captain and save the day. But, like, I'd like... Yeah. You know, like, maybe 5 years later for, like, me and Wally to cross paths. And I'll be like, oh, shit, you're Wally. And he'll be like... beeping at me, and I'll be like, yeah, we can hang out, and we become like best friends.
Yeah, isn't that Jeff Garland?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
But I don't want to be him. I just want to be random Axiom guy number 7.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
That sounds delightful. Again, adorable robots. Guys, come on.
Yeah. I'm gonna ask you a question, because I thought about this, and I was pretty okay with this. Does the alternate reality of It's a Wonderful Life count? Okay, no one has said anything yet, so I'm going to say it does.
That's because I haven't seen that film.
What? Talk about a dystopia, Bill. What is
this a bad time to mention? I have not seen that.
What the? Who are you fucking people? I know that you're like... You turn on a TV at Christmas. This is like when a girl I knew in college said she'd never seen Die Hard.
I have not watched it.
It's impossible that you haven't seen this. People watch this movie on accident 3 times a year. Like,
yeah, well, so what happens is I don't record this shit. So I turn it on and I'm like, oh, cool. It's the end of this fucking movie.
I have had
not
this
the beginning. So I'm not going to watch the end.
You constantly
even though
see
I know
the part
exactly.
Where he's like, running through the town going like, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas.
I know exactly what happens at the end, and I've seen like half of this film. But look, here's my version of my family. My family, when we get together, generally we don't watch a movie so much as talk over it the entire time. So it's not a good time when I'm together during the Christmas season with my family to watch something that I've never seen before. That seems like a terrible idea.
Yeah, I guess. All right, whatever.
In fact, you know what? I think I have seen most of this film.
Okay, well, let's... Okay, but you don't remember when he goes to Bedford Falls and it's Potterville?
I have no idea what you just said.
What was half the things in that sentence?
Bedford Falls is the name of the town that George Bailey lives in.
I'm so glad Michael was just as confused as I was.
Okay, so... I'll do a quick run through.
It sounded like you were speaking in tongues.
So George Bailey is the main character of the film, and he's like, I don't want to live anymore. Life is shit. There's a lot of reasons why. And so he leaves his town of Bedford Falls and goes to jump off a bridge where an angel has been sent to stop him. And the angel has to convince him to live. And he's like, you can't do it. It would have been better if I'd never been born. And the angel's like, great, let's run with that. So he takes him to an alternate reality where he'd never been born. One of the things in his life is that his family always stood up to this banker named Potter who wanted to basically like take over the town. But the Baileys always stood against that. But in this alternate reality, Potter has taken over the town. Now, one of the main things that they fight over, the Baileys and Potter, is whether or not like people should be given loans to build and own their own homes, whereas Potter's just like, no, I want to build like shanty towns and rent shit and get money. And so when he goes to Bedford Falls, it's actually called Potterville now. And Potter has taken over, which like is economically terrible for everyone there. But there's a scene where he's walking through Bedford Falls and it's like, oh, look how bad this place is. And it's like jazz clubs, a billiards hall, and like a burlesque show.
And doesn't he go inside the bar and he's like trying to get friendly with the bartender and he's like, I always come here and you always serve me this drink. And the guy's like, you're drunk. I don't recognize you at all. Right.
Yeah. He's like, you know me. I come in here all the time. Like, and the bartender's like, I never met you. I don't want to meet you. Now get out of here.
Yeah. That was a pretty good impression, actually, Brian.
Thank you. Most of my impressions fall flat, but some of them sometimes they get good.
Okay. But Jimmy Stewart, apparently.
So I have seen this film.
I think the guy's name is Nick. Yeah. Okay, so Bill, you have seen this film. But yeah.
Well, yes, I saw it last year again in the middle of all that chaos that I described. So the fact that I watched this film and could not remember that I watched this film tells you everything you need to know about how I watched this film.
Yes, which is not attentively. But what I'm saying is, in this world, like, white bread Bedford Falls has become Potterville, which is basically like 1970s Times Square, which is like, in the world of this movie, still not that bad. And I think that, like, personally, I would love to be able to go down to a pool hall, get some drinks, and then go to a jazz club. And it just, like, maybe it's a complete difference of the way we look at things now, but, like, I'm one of the few people I know who owns property, and everyone else is, like, totally cool renting and throwing their money down into the fiery pit of renting, which I was never fine with, but, like, other people are, and that's fine. I feel like it's more acceptable now, but in this movie they were like, you're just going to build houses and people are going to rent them? They're not going to own their own property? They're not going to raise their family in a place that's theirs? And in the movie it's like, that's like a human degradation. Like, it's awful that this man would do this. But now everyone seems pretty cool with it. Mm-hmm. So I feel like Potterville, filled with its jazz clubs and its bars and its burlesque club and its billiard hall, would actually be pretty awesome, pretty fucking cool to live in, rather than stuffy Bedford Falls, where everybody.
I don't know, Brian. It sounds like you're doing a lot of social commentary right now. After you were getting on me,
how is that social commentary?
Because you're talking about how owning something is no longer a thing.
Well, it's not. But what I'm saying is, like, in the movie, the concept of, like, well, these poor families won't have, like, ownership of their house. Like, that was a bad thing back then. But now, no one cares. Like, it doesn't matter. So, like, that main concept is gone. So you can throw out all the unhappiness from, like, oh, I'll never own my own house. I'll always be paying Potter. It's like, yeah, 90% of my friends are paying Potter right now, and they're living fine.
Yeah, well, and part of that is because they aren't necessarily settling down and, like, laying down roots. I mean, you have a fucking child and you're married, so
yeah. But I
yeah,
know people who've lived in the same place for 20 years. You could, that you've already put your roots down.
Well, you know, those are different people. Sure.
Yeah, he sucks. but anyway, yeah. So Potterville with its jazz clubs and its neon lights. What do you guys think? Sound like a good place to live, Bill Graham?
Yeah, that doesn't sound like much of a dystopia, so I guess, okay.
It was
presented
as one.
Yeah, in his mind, but, you know, that's a world you just got done describing the fact that is literally our world right now, so I guess maybe now is our dystopia. Yeah, okay, fine.
All right,
that was a Brian Rowan switcheroo.
So what I'm really saying is you're happy with the world as it is. All right, Michael Snydell. What do you think? Would you live in Potterville?
Yeah, I mean, I like jazz.
Can I
like,
sub?
I like alcohol.
Yeah, jazz
can
and
I,
alcohol.
Can I sub Potterville for the actual Potterville?
The fucking, like, place where they bury people who aren't named?
What? No. I'm talking about Harry Potter World. Like,
that's not called Potterville, is it?
I think. Is it called Potter,
like,
World?
Harry Potter's Wizarding World or something like that?
Yeah.
No, it's
like
called
that.
Potter World.
I know that a Potter's Field is where they bury unknown bodies.
It's called, wait, Wizarding World of Harry Potter, but it's called something. What the fuck is it called?
I don't know.
The Wizarding World of Harry Potter?
Yeah, it's just called the Wizarding World.
It's Potterville.
This is crazy. What are we talking about? I looked it up. A potter's field is, in fact, a burial place for paupers and strangers.
I don't know.
So Bill would like to live in a burial place for paupers and strangers.
No, I want to live in Harry Potter World.
All right. Well, you can't. That's not a dystopia.
We are being very.
It kind of is a dystopia.
You okay?
We're being very loose with our term dystopia. I mean, come on, guys.
I think it's a place that in the world of the film is fundamentally broken, and I think we've all done that. But Bill, what? You know what? I'm not going to ask you. I'm not going to ask you to explain why Harry Potter is a dystopia. I think we're going to move on.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'll ask you off mic. Because that's a weird fucking thing to say. But I think I might understand. But we're not here to talk about Harry Potter. We're here to talk about dystopias. So let's see what our wonderful, thoughtful, amazing fans had to say. All right. Kenneth Crahelli said, "This is the end, if that counts." And when I said, "Mother of God, why?" he said, "Why not? Hedonists finding their way to eternal salvation? I'd be down for that." Can't argue. Then we have Omar2049, who said Blade Runner, maybe Equilibrium. I'm kind of okay with that. Then we have Nicholas Fields, who said AI, artificial intelligence. We have Queen of the Slipstream, who said The Rover, Mad Max, The Hunger Games, Divergent, and Logan's Run. Then we also had The Batfan Film, said The Fifth Element. I don't know if that counts, but I'm allowing it for now. Then we have Dylan King, who said, "Children of Men, at least that story ends with some hope." So there you go, Bill. Then we have Thomas Keller, who said, "Fury Road, sign me up to be a half-life, living life on the edge and moving on to Valhalla, shiny and chrome."
Yes, Thomas, witness!
Thomas, it sounds like you're already there in your mind, and it's great. And then we have former Film Stage show host Amanda Waltz, and she said that she is surprised no dudes came out with The Handmaid's Tale. Oof. So that is that. That is all that we got back for this one. To be fair, even though it was less than one Rockin' Robin, I think people may have just been distracted. Living in this own dystopia that we've created. So that's that for our first. Again, I didn't come up with clever titles this time. I apologize. Our next topic is going to be all about movies, and now this is another one where we really should have tried to drill down into this, but about language / diplomacy /
I hope it's not dead on arrival.
Miscommunication.
Oh, ba-dunch.
Oh my god. / miscommunication. I hate you.
Darling, you got to let me know, should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time.
Yeah, that is The Clash, singing "Should I Stay or Should I Go?" One of the greatest songs about a lack of fundamental understanding ever. Because I feel like you don't need a whole song in order to ascertain whether or not you should stay or go. Though he does say, if I go, there will be trouble. If I stay, it will be double. And I feel like at that point, like, you just gotta go. You just gotta go, man. So, fucking 30 years too late, I'm making a judgment. Go. Go. We are here to talk about movies that deal with communication or diplomacy or misunderstandings, miscommunication. It's a very loose topic, but I'm hoping that we'll all get something good in. And we're doing this because Arrival is coming out. And in Arrival, aliens have visited Earth, and Amy Adams is there trying to understand the language so she knows what the hell they want. So, Michael Snydell, this was your idea, so you're going to kick us off. Why don't you tell us what your choice for a very good movie that deals with language / diplomacy / miscommunication is?
Well, it's as Bill kind of noted to me earlier, because earlier in this week, I don't know what day it was, because this week, but this is kind of a hard thing to nail down. Films that talk about language, not because there aren't many, but the fact that it's such a huge, there's such a diverse and complicated number of ways that movies can deal with language, whether it's, you know, misunderstandings in dialogue or characters who don't have the ability to speak to each other, which is specifically a film that the film that I picked deals specifically with a mute main character. And that is the 1993 Jane Campion film, The Piano, which is which stars Holly Hunter, Harvey Keitel, and Sam Neill, and Anna Paquin. And it's a period piece set in the 19th century, and it's about a woman who is sold by her father to live in New Zealand with this frontiersman there. And she is mute because she was supposedly struck by – or excuse me. She has not spoken since she lost her husband, who was supposedly killed by being struck by lightning. It's one of many touches that kind of goes – that kind of touches into kind of poetic flourish about whether it's true or not. And so the reason I picked The Piano is because it's all about a relationship that's communicated through touch and how we begin to understand each other even as we don't have the tools to be able to understand her. In the case of Holly Hunter's character, the only way she can communicate is writing down on a notepad or sign language. And so there are very, very few people around her. Even as she's kind of surrounded by, you know, servants, and she's living in this, you know, very grandiose surroundings, but she can't communicate. And the only way that she finds true connection is through a piano. So, yeah, it's an excellent film. I finally saw it this year, but, I especially love how it's just able to say so much about intimacy and how it doesn't need to come from long conversations and, you know, getting to know each other in a conventional way.
Now, you say she kind of like finds herself through a piano.
Sure.
Is that why it's called The Piano?
It is, yes. But it has other thematic resonance, which I will not get into.
All right. Bill Graham, would you want to live in the world of The Piano?
What?
I'm joking. That's not. Jesus. We're not doing that this
time. I was like, that sounds terrible.
Would you want your husband to be struck by lightning? Would you want to be a mute? Would you want to bed Harvey Keitel? Again, no. You don't have to answer any of these. I haven't seen The Piano. I know it mainly as a punchline. But
there is some scenes in it.
All right, that's cool. That's fine. So The Piano, all about intimacy and growing relationships without being able to communicate,
sure,
in your normal way. Bill Graham, what is your movie about miscommunication, exploring the intricacies of human dialogue? How about that?
Sure. I'll go ahead and mention one film just briefly and then kind of move on. But one of the films actually came out last year or 2014, depending on who you ask, this foreign language film called Blind that I watched. It was all about sensory deprivation and this blind woman who is kind of suddenly blind, and she is staying alone at the house while her husband is at work, and she starts to think and feel that he's there when he's not supposed to be there, and that he's kind of stepping out on her and doing all these crazy things. And it's all about trust and kind of their communication with each other when she's recently lost her sight. And so it's pretty intense. It's definitely high level drama stuff, but I just wanted to mention it briefly because I think it definitely deserves a lot of a lot of attention. I thought it was fantastic, and I saw it last year. But this film is Blind, and the director is Eskil Vogt, I believe. Okay. So, yeah. Anyways, my film is going to be The Social Network. I think this film, a lot of it is based around language, and a lot of it is based around how we communicate with each other. It is about creating a reality that we now live in, where we talk to each other through emojis and likes and little hearts and sharing things online, and it has perpetuated more communication than just about anything. And yet what it's kind of hurt is our face-to-face communication, because what it does is it makes us feel like we are familiar with a lot of people, and yet it doesn't give us a whole lot of ability to talk to them once we see them in person, at least for me. At times it helps us communicate better, at times it hurts us, but that's what that whole film is kind of surrounding. There's a lot of miscommunication in the middle of it. Arguably a lot of the lawsuit that kind of surrounds Facebook and things like that is surrounded by miscommunication and who said what and what their intention was and things like that. But there's also other miscommunications throughout the film, whether it's literally the miscommunication that starts the film, that introduces us to Rooney Mara, that is fantastic. And, you know, this is definitely, I think, one of the highlight sequences in cinema, and definitely in Fincher's work, that it just spirals out of control because this guy just does not know how to talk to another human being, let alone a woman that he's attracted to.
All right. This is to my shame. I have not seen The Social Network yet.
What?
We
get to shame you.
Yeah. No, okay, what the hell,
fuck you,
man?
Because it's been like two years, and I don't care. I don't know.
2 years? What?
You said it's
what?
Yeah. It's you have had 70 years to see It's a Wonderful Life.
The Social Network did not come out 2 years ago.
You just said it came out in 2014, 2015.
No, that was Blind.
Like 2011,
Blind, dude.
Well, I still don't care. I don't know. Like, guys, here's an open secret. I find Aaron Sorkin to be insufferable.
So what?
I just like I wasn't eager to see it, and then I just didn't, and then it stopped being a part of the conversation so quickly that I didn't feel the need to.
What? In decade conversations.
Yeah. This is definitely like on top of the Reznor score and everything like that.
Look, the Reznor score. If that man never makes another score, I'd be okay.
See, okay.
Just put a microphone next to a copy machine and be done with it.
So you just got a lot of hate. That's what you
I
got.
I mean, I got a lot of hate for Reznor, and I don't, like, Aaron Sorkin's, like, fun.
How about Fincher?
Fincher's cool. Fincher's fine. I actually might watch Zodiac later tonight, so
go watch Social Network.
Go watch Social Network. Look, guys, it's been a bad week. I just want to watch a movie that I've seen already that I know I'm going to enjoy. Don't take Wally away. I might watch Wally. I was in the middle of Sicario before I got on here.
Oh, that sounds delightful.
Note to the world, my daughter seems to love Sicario.
Probably the music.
You guys are watching a lot of dramatic shit. I've stayed with comedies lately. Like, I just need a break.
Well, Mike, I got good news for you, because I'm about to talk about a movie that is a comedy that is all about miscommunication.
Big Lebowski?
No. Way that language,
being there?
Even yes.
Wait, fuck, real?
Yeah. That was a good one. Good for you. Oh my god, how did you just pull that out of nowhere?
You guys are just touching dicks and being up right now.
Bill, I agreed with you on all the dystopias. I mean, if anyone's, you know what, I'm not even going to say
you're
it.
You're still
I don't
a fuck for
it.
The Social Network opinion, though.
Whatever. This movie's by Hal Ashby. It's called Being There. And it involves Peter Sellers being a gardener who works for a man who somehow lives in like a mansion that is like walled off and completely shut off from the world in Washington, D.C. And then the guy dies and Chance is just sent out into the world and he tells people he's Chance the Gardener and they think his name is Chauncey Gardener. And I've got a scene queued up. And he is about to talk with like one of the major power brokers in America who has like the ear of the president. And I want you to just witness this scene as the perfect example of like willful and hilarious and potentially tragic miscommunication.
Mr. Garner, do you agree with Ben or do you think we can stimulate growth through temporary incentives?
As long as the roots are not severed, all is well. And all will be well in the garden.
In the garden?
Yes. In a garden, growth has its season. First comes spring and summer, but then we have fall and winter. And then we get spring and summer again.
Spring and summer?
Yes.
Then fall and winter?
Yes.
I think what our insightful young friend is saying is that we welcome the inevitable seasons of nature, but we're upset by the seasons of our economy.
Yes. There will be growth in the spring.
Well, Mr. Garner, I must admit that is one of the most refreshing and optimistic statements I've heard in a very, very long time. I admire your good, solid sense. That's precisely what we lack on Capitol Hill.
Isn't it just? And I should note, again, he's not a clever man. He's not attempting to make an analogy. He's just a gardener who literally knows not us what to say. And it's a whole movie of that. And it is delightful. And everyone should watch it. And, you know, it's a political parable. I didn't even think about this when I was really picking it. But I think at this point in our lives, we could all afford to laugh at our government a little bit. Since we all seem to be in a state of perpetual fear. So that's my choice. Being There, starring Peter Sellers. The wonderful, delightful Peter Sellers, directed by Hal Ashby. Have you two seen this? Mike, you called it out, but have you actually seen it?
Yes, I've actually seen it.
Don't give me that tone. Don't give me that fucking tone, Mr. What's It's a Wonderful Life? I don't know who Jimmy Stewart is.
Yeah, okay. I've seen it.
Bill, have you seen Being There?
No.
Based on that clip, do you think that you would?
I mean, I'm interested now.
All right.
I'm curious.
Bill, you got to give Brian an ultimatum, though.
Oh, like he won't watch it unless I see The Social Network?
Yeah.
I don't care about him seeing it that much. Is it bad that right now, like, all I want to do is just do the rest of this in Jimmy Stewart's voice? Well, I never felt the need to see The Social Network.
Oh, boy. How do I mute you?
I'm sure there's a button for that somewhere. But we're done. That's all. We didn't ask for feedback on this particular one. Because honestly, how would you even phrase this in a tweet? But if you do have a movie that you'd like to send our way that you think fits this, maybe we can read it next time. You can email us, podcast@thefilmstage.com, or tweet at us @filmstageshow, or go on our Facebook page, which is The Film Stage on Facebook. So, The Film Stage Show on Facebook. Yeah, go to The Film Stage and like them too. They're fine. So, that is all. Before we go, let me remind everyone out there.
What? We should announce what we're going to be talking about next.
Yeah, in like literally a day or two after this comes out, we'll be talking about Arrival. And we, after that, we're not sure, but when we figure it out, we will be tweeting it.
We have possibilities. We want... It's not like we haven't thought about
it. Oh, we've thought about it too much is really what the problem is. It could be Love Witch. It could be, I don't know. What are the other ones?
It could be Certain Women. It could be other things that we're forgetting.
It doesn't matter. We'll figure it out, and we'll let you guys know.
Oh, Edge of 17?
For some reason, I was really hoping you were going to say Edge of Tomorrow.
I would watch that again.
Yeah, I'd watch it again, too.
Guys, that's a new movie podcast. Dystopia.
What was that?
We're on a new movie podcast.
Yeah, and I just talked about being there, and you motherfuckers haven't seen It's a Wonderful Life. So I don't know. I don't really want to hear about it.
No, I have.
Oh, yeah, Bill, you discovered...
It's on my shelf.
So pick it up. Watch it. It's Christmas season, baby.
It is not Christmas season.
It's after Halloween, man. It's Christmas season.
No,
jingle bells are jingling. You got mistletoe hung up everywhere.
Weren't you just saying Christmas is right around the corner on the last episode? And we were like, no, get the fuck out.
Christmas is right around the corner. And that's why our wonderful fans should find us on iTunes and give us the gift of a comment and a rating. Because it's never too early to start Christmas shopping for the podcast in your life.
What we should do is we should do some homework. Brian, you should go watch Social Network. I will watch... It's a Wonderful World. I almost forgot about It's a Wonderful Life. I will watch that as if I've never seen it before, because basically I haven't seen it before. And then Michael will watch it absolutely from the beginning to the end for the first time.
I've seen bits of it.
Watch it from beginning to end for the first time ever. I didn't say watch bits and pieces of it.
You know what? I'm going to do that, actually.
Right,
there you go. Woo! Peace and love and harmony, guys.
All right, we got a few things to say before the end here. Let me get some seasonal music on.
Oh, Jesus.
So, what do we want from you? We want you to find us on Twitter @FilmStageShow. We want you to give us a comment and a rating on iTunes. We love that. Email us, podcast@thefilmstage.com. And guys, we don't want to just get stuff from you. We want to give something to you. So get some MUBI. Get a whole month of MUBI on us. All you have to do is go to MUBI.com/filmstage for a free month of MUBI, the curated streaming cinema. There's too much stuff out, guys. There's too much on Amazon, on the Netflix. It's crazy. You'll never pick something. But on MUBI, they take care of that for you. They narrow it down to only the best. This is my favorite part. So go to MUBI.com, MUBI.com/filmstage, and get your free month and see why we keep telling you how friggin' awesome MUBI is, because MUBI is friggin' awesome. All right, I'll turn off the Christmas music. That's it. Let's tell the fine people where we can be found at home, and then we can get out of here and get back to our booze and our ice cream. Bill Graham, where can we find you online?
You can find me figuring out all the run times of films from now until existence on Twitter @CableBFG. You can also find me.
You know what you should start doing is when we do our announcement of what we're going to do next, you should tell us what the run time is.
Ah, damn it. Hold on. Give me a second. Okay, here's Arrival. Come on, Draft House, move a little bit faster. In the meantime, you can... Oh, it's 116 minutes, so it's almost 2 hours long.
Oh, so this is like perfect for Bill.
Yes.
Where else can
whoa, whoa,
find
hold
you?
On. Yeah. You can find me writing about movies on the film stage. The Trevante Rhodes for Moonlight interview just went live earlier this week. Probably bad timing, but, you know, whatever. Great interview. I think Jordan really liked it, so I really like it, and Trevante really liked it. So
that woo. Means you assholes at home are really going to like it.
Yeah.
Except for me and Brian, apparently.
Everyone seems to think I hated that movie. I didn't hate that movie.
You know, it was a C minus.
Bill, someone on my Twitter feed actually said Bill pointed out how much you were saying negative about it, and I was like, yeah, but what Bill didn't say is how many good things I was saying about it. So I was right. I was right to correct you because yeah, you started building a narrative, you asshole.
You know, it's your negative tone. That's what hurts. That's what
I can't help it. I'm Irish. We don't have a positive tone. I wanted to. He said I hated it. I'm like, yeah, I didn't hate it. You want to listen to me hate
that.
Something? No, he said it, and I was like, you want to listen to me hate something? You listen to Kate Plays Christine. You listen to Queen of Earth, and you learn what my hatred sounds like.
Oh man,
Michael Snydell, please. Help us get closer to the end. Where can we find you online?
You can find me talking about not wanting to leave my apartment on Twitter at Snydell. The interview with the stars of Indignation, Sarah Godin and Logan Lerman, is up on the film stage now. I'm pretty happy with it. I have a number of reviews from SIF again, so take a look at those. Particularly, I Am Not Your Negro is a real highlight.
All right, and you can find me at my personal site, dearfilm.net, where I have a review of The Monster, which is coming out soon, and my Twitter is at Brian J. Rowan. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you again so much for joining us, and tune in when we talk about Arrival. And I say